Welcome to the ninth podcast in OnFIF's focus series on fintech. The aim of the series is to analyse developments in financial technology and the implications for public and private sector institutions. Last week, we discussed cybersecurity and the importance of national and international cooperation. In today's episode, we examine artificial intelligence. My name is Oliver Thieu. I'm Programs Manager at OnFIF, and I'm pleased to be joined by Chiranjit Chakraborty, Data Scientist at the Bank of England, and Robin Gossett, Chief Technology Officer of Mindbridge, a company that develops machine learning and data science-based tools. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
There is no single definition of artificial intelligence, and it is regularly used as shorthand to talk about everything from chatbots to deep learning. When it comes to financial services, an increasing number of companies across all sectors have been working on creating real-life AI use cases and applications for this range of technologies. At the heart of the AI revolution are machine learning algorithms, software that self-improves, that is fed more and more data, a trend that the financial industry can benefit from immensely. How has AI changed the financial service industry over the past 5 years? And where do you see the greatest application of AI and machine learning algorithms within the financial services sector?
I think where you see AI being adopted most of all is in places where there are so big data problems where normal kind of human means to solve them isn't working well, or it can't cope with the volume and the scale. So if you take audit as an example, you have a human being looking at transactions to verify if they're good or not. And if you think of an auditor, it has to come in and very quickly look at all of the transactions that are going on. And one of the coping mechanisms that human beings had for that problem was doing something called sampling. They take just a small set so that they can cope with the volume. They take a smaller set and verify that those are okay. So if you think what AI is able to do in that situation, we can train an AI to look at every transaction, to do it in real time as well. And that means that you're not building up a backlog of all transactions to verify. We can kind of codify that human knowledge about what is valid transaction as well. And we can do that at vast scale, which wouldn't be possible for a human being. So the biggest disruptive element, I think, is the ability to kind of codify some degree of human intelligence into these systems and apply them at really vast scale. And this is going to cause all kinds of improvements in the quality of activities like audit. So what I see is anywhere where there's a lot of data and there's a need for us to take some degree of human understanding of a problem domain, train an AI to understand that, and then we can apply it at scale. Any scenario like that, and there are quite a few, but the one that I like to refer to is audit.
Chiranjit, your view on this, where do you see AI being applied and how do you think it changed the financial service industry over the most recent years?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. And you are definitely right that AI means different things to different people. And in general, we call it AI when the machines are performing some specific task that normally require human intelligence, such as visual perception and speech recognition, decision making, language translation and all. So some of the notable applications of these things in financial sectors, I can think of the insurance sector in particular. Insurance leaders use AI in claims processing to streamline process flows. They also try to offer more tailored products like fraud detection and money laundering detections are often done using AI. Banks use chatbots to improve customer experience. So in asset and wealth management, particularly, the AI application still quite limited. But I think with those robo-advisors, things are picking up quite rapidly. There are AI systems built to make trading decisions, which cause flash crashes, though you know about that. So they are generally to augment human intelligence rather than to replace them completely as of now. So from end-user perspective and consumer's perspective, comparing different financial products are now much easier. And recommended products by AI system tailored to individual needs are certainly picked up a lot in the last 5 years. We have seen an increasing use of machine learning-based algorithms in financial risk management. The system can now mine huge information more quickly and create more accurate credit profiles to help making investment decisions. So I think that has definitely helped peer-to-peer lending industry to grow so rapidly, and I believe something more to come in future. In general, I'll say what changed mainly is awareness. The practitioners in the financial industry now understand the importance and challenges of AI and machine learning much more than what was there 5 years back.
Yes, there certainly has been increased awareness, I would say. Many financial institutions have announced ambitious plans, if you will, to integrate artificial intelligence and machine learning. Although customers are often left waiting months sometimes for these proposed products and services, what do you consider to be the greatest challenge when it comes to actually adopting or implementing AI technology? And what can financial institutions do to expedite this process?
So first of all, the financial system is a complex beast. So taming the beast by implementing some AI system is not that easy. I can see a few challenges that are making things slower. First of all, AI and machine learning are heavily dependent on data, as you all know, and integrating the data from different sources stored in different format takes time. and the data-hungry nature of AI solutions, which often need to capture and mine vast volumes of consumer information and personal data, also creates challenges with compliance. So many big technology providers are cloud-based. For banks and other financial industries, data are much more sensitive and hence cannot just use external cloud to deploy AI-based solutions. So they have to support on-campus deployment where banks' internal servers run the software. And the system should be secure, resilient, fault-tolerant. Even a fraction of seconds of downtime may cause huge losses, as you all know. So building such infrastructure internally takes time, money, as well as human resources. Some surveys say there is still a fear of failure of the system and unclear internal ownership of the emerging technologies. Moreover, many AI and machine learning-based solutions are black box type, and hence there is still some mistrust that they will work in longer term. To overcome some of those challenges, I feel more collaboration of financial and technology experts are definitely required. That will surely build more trust and understanding. Also, to meet the demand, I don't think the financial industry should hurry unnecessarily. They should not launch a system if they are not sure that the system is secure, resilient, and fault-tolerant. So they do not need to race against some of those technology giants. So they should take things slowly and steadily. But some of the challenges are still there and hopefully to be overcome in due time.
Thank you. I think the idea of collaboration is very important between tech and financial services. And obviously, as you pointed out, no point rushing to provide some sort of solution when really a sort of more considered approach might work. Robin, as someone who works within a sort of AI company, if you will, what do you see as challenges when it comes for financial institutions in terms of adopting the new technology? And is there anything that you think that can be done to expedite this whole process?
I think one of the points that was just made was about trust in AI. And certainly, I've seen that as one of the big issues that organizations working in the AI field really need to think a lot about. Because if you think about the types of roles where AI is coming to help, so, you know, in people making financial decisions, people who are, you know, professional financial accountants, auditors, even lawyers are being assisted by AIs these days. And in that environment, you know, these are professional people. Quite often they have to justify their actions. And what you can't have is an AI being a black box in that scenario. What you need is an AI that can explain its working, explain its thinking to its human counterpart. And you mentioned collaboration between companies. I also think we need to think about AI systems collaborating with their users in how they explain themselves. And I know at Mindbridge, we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, as we're applying algorithms to areas, how do we explain the findings so that it's not a, you know, computer says yes or no. It hears the evidence that support the conclusion. Here's why it's unusual or normal or whatever it is. And really, you know, we took that approach because some of our users can be asked to stand up in a court of law and justify an action that they have taken. So they need all of that evidence. So I think building AIs responsibly in a way where they can explain themselves is a very big part of building trust in AI systems. I think it's an often overlooked thing. People, they focus on the algorithm and they don't think about the communication of the outcome. I think that's one of the big challenges that people who are working in the AI industry really need to think about. I think there's a lot of work going on at the moment. Some of the deep learning technology, a lot of people are raving about, it's led a lot of the growth in AI in the last little while. We really need to think about how we take those technologies and turn them into something that people can understand, non-technical people can understand as well. So I would say that that's one of the biggest barriers to adoption. And there's this kind of fear of, you know, what is the AI going to tell me next? But you know, and I think the collaboration between firms, we're working with AI companies and building these, it's often thinking about how we explain the outcome. And so I'd say that is the biggest single item. I think also organizations working together, collaborating on the solutions. A lot of the new technology is being driven by small, agile innovators and working with regulators or larger organizations. It helps both sides. From one side, the technology matures faster. And from the other side, you also have the awareness of the state of the art. Art of the possible is also being conveyed.
That's a very, very interesting point that you've touched upon there, this issue of trust. Obviously, there will be a fear of the unknown. So as you said, it's about helping communicate that, not just from companies, but actually from the AI itself to their human counterparts. And that's something I'm glad to hear that you at Mindbridge are working on. And it is encouraging that there's a step forward that other companies and individuals and organizations can take. One area where there has been an increase in the use of AI is in fraud detection and prevention, which you both alluded to. We know that organizations have combined machine learning algorithms and big data sets to detect fraudulent transactions. What has been your experience so far with this area, and how has AI helped improve the detection of financial fraud? Do you see sort of key benefits and conversely maybe some of the risks or challenges in this area?
I think AI is a very good match to the kind of fraud detection problem, because it is, you know, there's mountains of data and you're often finding a needle in a haystack, something that's out of the ordinary. And machines are actually very good at that kind of thing. So I think it's a very good fit from that perspective. One of the things I like to compare is artificial intelligence or machine learning to the techniques that were used more commonly before, which were typically rules-based systems. They're looking for things that follow a particular pattern, which are codified into the system. So we experience a fraud event, and then what we do is we think about, how do we catch this the next time? You're always kind of having to think ahead to what is the set of rules that we can apply that will stop this happening in future. And that's actually also a lot of how regulation works. Something happens and then we regulate to try to prevent it happening again. Now, the interesting thing about rules is they will only ever find something that you kind of anticipate that they will find. So they'll never find something unexpected. And they also have to be maintained. As the world changes, you have to maintain them. This is one of the weaknesses of the rules-based approach. The nice thing about machine learning or artificial intelligence in this space is that it can find things that are unexpected, things you haven't specifically coded it finds, which are anomalous or unusual and are worthy of a human follow-up. So I think the exciting thing about applying AI to this space is that it's able to adapt to new circumstances more easily. You don't have to code it for every circumstance you're looking for. And it can actually help anticipate problems that you haven't seen yet, or variations on exploits, for example, that your rule wouldn't capture, but the AI would say, no, this looks similar to something I've seen before, and I think this could be an issue. And there's actually some evidence for this working well. There was a recent kind of worm which caused a huge impact on many organizations who were running older versions of Windows, and the antiviruses that detected it were the ones that were machine learning based, the rules-based ones, because it had changed subtly. It had mutated itself. So if you think about that from a fraud detection, people are trying different patterns to exploit a system. They're looking for things that won't be noticed. And if they know the rules, they can figure out how to get by them. But a machine learning algorithm will actually find those slight variations that you haven't maybe coded precisely, but the AI will say, hey, this looks like this other thing that we saw earlier. And so the other thing that I think is really good from a fraud prevention standpoint is often just slowing down a transaction so that a human being can intervene and say, hey, we should just check this just to make sure it's okay, is often enough to prevent a lot of issues. But it's having that early warning signal that, you know, this looks unusual. And again, this is the circumstance AI is really good at finding. I mean, that's why I think that we're going to see more of this. And that's also why I think AI is very well suited to this domain.
Thank you, Robert. Very good to hear that, you know, this technology can provide that early warning signal. As you said, it can adapt to new circumstances and do things in a more efficient way than traditional methods have. And as you said, when it comes to fraud detection and prevention, really just being able to have that first indicator allows a human to come in, someone to come and check that, can often prevent some sort of serious financial crime or fraud. Chandrit, what's your take on this? Have you experienced anything? I mean, from the Bank of England's point of view, do you see a big area for growth and potential in it?
Yeah, surely. There are a lot of scope in this field. And as Robin already pointed out, machine learning is really good to point out these type of problems because they are not very common. They are quite rare. And finding this type of subtle changes are very difficult to detect manually. And also processing huge amount of data is almost impossible. So personally, I didn't do much work in the financial fraud detection yet, but there are plenty of scopes for sure. So detection of fraudulent transactions from consumers are much more relevant to private banks rather than to us in Bank of England as a central bank, but there are a lot of responsibility come to that. So from a regulatory point of view, financial misconduct and frauds are generally handled by FCA, Financial Conduct Authority in UK, as you know. However, we have plenty of other responsibilities related to that, especially when the bank operates our RTGS, real-time gross settlement system, to hold accounts for financial institutions so that they can settle in real-time tap payment system, and we manage that. So AI and machine learning can help not just to detect intentional fraudulent activities or money laundering, but also unintentional or unexpected sequence of transactions that can make the system slow or deadlock. So similar type of algorithms are definitely helpful, and we are kind of working on that. So the RTGS renewal program already announced and will deliver the next generation of our RTGS system. The program is currently in its definition phase, during which we will establish the priorities, sequencing, and timetable for transitioning to the new RTGS system. And the new system will deliver a range of new features and capabilities, and potentially can use more AI and machine learning based solutions in future. So key benefits of AI in fraud detection is it can flag some of those transactions as red very quickly, while manual detection, as we have already discussed, of such activity are either impossible or very much time consuming. So there can be a lot of hidden patterns of fraudulent activities, and the system can or the algorithm can pick that quite efficiently. There are quite a few challenges, obviously. First of all, these transaction data are quite sensitive data. So there are information security risks. So we need to make sure that there is no silly bug in the implementation of the AI system that can open an opportunity to the hackers or the cyber attackers. So to stop the fraudulent transaction and money laundering, we should not open the door for cyber fraud. So we should make sure that these things are handled properly, of course. And more complex system, more places where the information security can be compromised. So we need to be careful there. So I'm sure that there will be a lot of work in coming days. I'm not personally involved in kind of fraud detection technique as of now, but I'm quite excited to work on that field because there are many other opportunities in the future.
Thank you for that. Just going on to this idea, one other thing is that Mindbridge themselves was selected to be part of the Bank of England's FinTech Accelerator Programme, where the bank helped develop a proof of concept to help highlight financial anomalies. Robin, could you explain a bit more about this collaboration? And do you think this type of partnership between the private and public sector is important to help develop AI applications within the financial service sector?
Yeah, so Mindbridge was selected to be a part of the FinTech Accelerator Program, which is very exciting for us as a small company to work with the Bank of England. And it was a very productive collaboration. We worked together on a particular credit union regulation use case. And we had my data science team from Mindbridge and my software engineering team working with experts from the bank in understanding the domain and then seeing how we could apply our anomaly detection and machine learning techniques to that data set. So you can actually, if you go to the Bank of England's website, they actually published a report on the findings from the FinTech Accelerator program. So, you know, they encourage people to go and Google Bank of England and Mindbridge, and you should be able to find the document fairly easily. But it gives a kind of outline of the circumstances and what happened. But it was a successful collaboration, and we're continuing to work with the bank. My opinion of this kind of work, and I've been in large companies, I was IBM Distinguished Engineer for many years. I've been in small companies that are startups, and I see huge benefits to large companies or large organizations working with smaller startup technologies, mainly because most of the kind of rapid moving, fast paced innovation is coming from the smaller organizations. And by working with larger organizations, they can, you know, share the state of the art, and they can also learn a lot about, you know, what it takes to be successful in these kind of large regulatory environments or large corporate environments. So I see it really benefits both sides from a learning perspective. And I think that was our objective in the collaboration. And I think both the bank and Mindbridge have succeeded in that in the first stage. So we're very excited to continue that as well, because one of the things I think is quite important is with AI and machine learning, that the rate of change there at the moment is very fast. There's a huge amount of research going on currently in, you know, algorithm design and applying it to new fields. And I think the problem for a large institution is that rate of change is quite hard for them to sustain. And if when there are regulatory impacts or things that they need to be thinking about, one of the best ways of figuring out what's the state of the art is to actually work with some of the smaller firms. And I think that's important because it's going to bring to the forefront issues that we can work together to solve. And that's going to help with the adoption. And it's going to help both organizations to figure out the next steps, what the future looks like. So I see it as a very positive thing. I think more of that kind of collaboration is really needed, particularly between large organizations. And there's a lot of startups who are working in the kind of AI space right now and developing really innovative new things. And I think getting exposure to those technologies is going to be important going forward.
Yes, thank you. I think the idea of collaborating and working with smaller startups is something that we've seen throughout the fintech sector with some of the larger banks as well. Obviously, working with these smaller organizations will benefit the central banks, such as the Bank of England. Charanjit, perhaps you could share a bit of your view on this idea of collaborating between these public and private sector and obviously larger institutions and smaller ones as well.
So yeah, of course, this was a very successful collaboration. As Robin pointed out, we have published one small note on that as well. And I was not directly involved in that project, but many of my colleagues are involved and I have heard a lot of good things about it. So as you know, the Bank of England's, the main objective of this FinTech Accelerator initiative is to work in partnership with the firms working with the new technology to explore how FinTech innovations could be used in central banking. This helps us to, first of all, improve our understanding of these fintech trends and different algorithms, techniques and that can be used, and also allow us to support the development of this sector, because this is one of the very fast growing sectors, as we all know. So regarding this particular project, as Robin already pointed out, that it was based on those credit union data to find some of those anomalies. I think that was around 100,000 data points, and it was, I think, like 7 and 8 years old. In general, those type of anomaly detection processes were quite manual before. And there are some adoption of technologies, but not in large scale. So Mindbridge AI combines artificial intelligence and machine learning with more conventional techniques to produce some risk score. And that was definitely helpful. And it was quite good for us to understand how different kind of mathematical techniques can be used. But also not just the algorithm and technique. I have also heard that its user interface is quite intuitive and present the data visualization. allowing the user to explore a time series of each variable while comparing the result to the industry average was much easier. So this type of interface is also quite easy for the practitioners and the non-technical person. So there are more details published in the website, as I mentioned. Regarding the other part, so for example, whether this type of collaboration is good or not, definitely, as we have already discussed before. So I personally think this type of partnership between the private and public sectors is definitely important to promote the application of these AI and machine language algorithms more and more, and not just anomaly detection, but also the operations of our day-to-day activities. So when a central bank starts giving importance to new technology, that automatically spreads some sort of trust. We already discussed about the trust, and this is quite important on this type of technology. And many other financial sectors, small organization and big organization, can try to adopt these things more seriously. So more development of AI applications in financial industry will be much more easy to do after that. And another point that we have discussed, that is a collaboration of smaller and a larger organization. I think that is also quite important. I used to work in a small technology consultancy firms, and I realized that there are a lot of agility and much fast movement there. And in bigger organizations, there are a lot of other bottlenecks. So when these two type of organizations work together, that basically both of the organizations can learn from each other and finally help each other. And especially when these artificial intelligence, machine learning, and those things are concerned, although they are here for a long time, but still not being used with its full potential, to promote this type of things in future, collaborations are definitely quite important.
Thank you. Moving on a bit, in terms of there is collaboration that we've discussed is important. What else do you think central banks, treasuries, and regulators can do to encourage development of AI?
So FinTech Accelerator that we have just discussed is one such initiative. Also, there are many other kind of communications that we often do. So like many of our senior members mention externally how important it is to use more data-driven techniques and machine learning, but also want to rely on this too much. So conveying such message is quite important. And also, we have published one research paper on machine learning at Central Bank. So hopefully, our published paper will encourage development of AI in policy context in particular. So similarly, other government organizations or public sectors, treasuries and other probably will do something very similar. In Bank of England, we have also a division named Central Bank Studies or CCBS. The division acts as a global forum for central bank and regulatory authority experts throughout the world to exchange views and share best practices in central bank policies and operations. So we have organized a few conferences to promote the applications of data science, machine learning, advanced analytics, and other similar techniques and tools. So that definitely helped to promote and spread the awareness. A couple of years back, we also organized a data visualization competition. So similar type of initiative like hackathon and other things can definitely encourage more developers.
Thank you. And Robin, your view on this, what can regulators as well as central banks and other official institutions help to do to encourage the development of AI?
I think the FinTech Accelerator program that Bank of England is running is a great example of an initiative that is encouraging that activity. So I see it as a really good pattern for central banks can engage with technology and actually encourage both the adoption and development of it. I think it's important for regulators and financial institutions to really engage in this kind of AI evolution that's happening right now. I think the reason for that is I see that the rate of change is increasing. The innovation in this space is really kind of reaching a peak. And I think it's important that organizations don't get left behind in that. Things like the FinTech Accelerator program, where it's allowing organizations to collaborate and work on innovative solutions together. That's a great way of accelerating it. It's a great way of raising awareness. I think the fact that the bank also publishes the examples of the outcomes of the accelerator program is also a great way of sharing the knowledge. In the AI community, there is broadly people share. They share algorithm design. There's a lot of public forums. And I think that's important to, if you like, level the playing field so that everybody can be a part of the change that AI is bringing. So yeah, I think the bank has a great program there. And I think more of that kind of initiative is really what's required, in my opinion.
Thank you. And as you said, the accelerators are a very positive setup where companies can be involved. And there are other central banks around the world that are establishing their accelerators. And I think taking on board this new technology and looking to help not only promote it, but also look for, you know, specific applications, both within the central bank and externally. You said as well, the papers that are authored by the Bank of England and central banks, again, it's about sharing this information and creating a level playing field. As you said, Robin, is important. Charanjit, you co-authored a paper actually on machine learning. I was wondering if you could just briefly explain a bit about that paper. I mean, you mentioned the idea of applying machine learning technology to analyzing regulatory data.
Yes, sure. So machine learning is yet to make major impact in financial regulation and policy decision, I will say, in central bank. However, it is gradually finding its place. So, but there are plenty of potentials that we have discussed in our paper. Although they are not new in financial sector in general, but not that much utilized in policy setup. So we introduce machine learning in the context of central banking and policy analysis in our paper. So we present three main case studies relevant to central bank policy design, financial regulation, and economic modeling more widely. So I'd like to discuss those three things very quickly. First, we model the detection of alerts on the balance sheets of financial institutions in the context of banking supervisions. So like mining or regulatory submission data. Regular close scrutiny of banks' balance sheets has become an essential task for supervisors following the financial crisis, as we know. However, the manual inspection of hundreds or thousands of firms' records can be inefficient and also inaccurate. So machine learning can really make this process much faster and help finding some hidden patterns, which is basically almost impossible to find otherwise. So second case study that we discussed, we performed a projection exercise for UK CPI inflation on a medium-term horizon of 2 years. Here we introduce a simple training testing framework for time series analysis. There are plenty of forecasting models we are using in central bank to gauge the performance of our economy. So machine learning and AI-based solutions can definitely augment the currently used technologies and currently used techniques and methods. We investigated the funding patterns of technology startups using machine learning algorithms with the aim to detect potential disruptive innovations in financial technology. So machine learning can help us for horizon scanning exercise as well and detect potential source of financial instability that we may have missed by other means. So there are many other possible use cases, but we have focused on these three main cases in our paper. So not just the regulatory data, but also a lot of other macroeconomic data and many other data sources from other probably news and many other articles we can probably use to use machine learning to help us to understand the economy much better.
Thank you. And Robin, Chanjit was mentioning that there are many applications for AI on a macro level. The central bank, it's helping in terms of forecasting modeling. Do you see applications for this for AI? And also maybe perhaps on the idea of regulatory data and analyzing that. Again, using machines to analyze huge sets. Surely that will be a big area of growth in terms of AI in the financial service sector.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the learnings that we've had out of the collaboration with the Bank of England. From MindBridge perspective, we see lots of potential there. So the other thing that I think is kind of exciting is that it's often not one AI technique that proves the most probative or has the best ability to detect a certain pattern. It's often a combination of different techniques. And when you're thinking about financial regulation and the regulation of financial data and institutions, there are many, many variables involved. And while you could build a really big model that tries to detect everything, what we found in our work is that it's often a combination of different algorithm classes with things like conventional regulatory rules, which actually helps build a very robust answer to the regulation issues. So that's one of the learnings that's come out of the work that we've had is it's often it's a combination of different techniques. But I see a huge amount of scope. AI really makes the difference in this space, I think. And I see huge amounts of scope for it being applied at the macro level.
Very interesting to hear that actually it's often different AI components or applications rather than just one overarching one that can achieve the goals. More recently, a Deutsche Bank CEO said that a large number of people working for the bank will lose their jobs as a result of automation and robotics over the coming years. Conversely, there was a research paper suggesting the impact of AI technologies on businesses is projected to increase labor productivity up by 40%, enable people to make more efficient use of their times. We know that AI has potential to transform entire industries, including the financial service sector and labor markets, both positively and negatively. What are your thoughts on this? What do you think the impact will be on the wider economy, including growth, productivity, and employment? I mean, do you see opportunities here for positive transformation, such as realignment of labor away from menial work to focus more creative and innovative tasks in the production chain? And how can we start to address the issue that is probably going to be technological unemployment?
I think it's an issue that needs to be discussed. I think there is potential for this to be a positive thing. I mean, if you think back to, you know, the Industrial Revolution or the creation of automated looms and things like that, people were very fearful at that point that this would take away their livelihood. But what actually happened was the automation tended to take on the impractical, dangerous, or not very interesting work. And I think the example I gave of you train an AI and let it work at a scale that a human being could not, just because there's vast amounts of data. I think that's a good example where a human being can't today address that issue very easily, and it would be very laborious for them to do it. So AIs can solve that kind of problem more easily. They're tireless in that respect. So I'm hopeful that what this is going to look like is much more the AI augmenting our ability to get our jobs done and freeing us for the higher cognitive tasks. Yeah, if you think of it from the perspective of taking on the things that are low cognitive, repetitive activities, which do require some kind of human training usually, and then freeing people to work on the more meaningful things. I'm very hopeful that that's where the future is going to take us. The other thing I would say is that it's probably better to think about rather than replacing human beings. I think there will be some displacement. I think what we're going to have is the need for us to think about people retraining for new roles that get created as the result of us having AI. I see that there is going to be both creation and displacement happening, and it's how we react to that displacement that's going to be really important going forward. I think now is the right time to have the conversation. I don't know that huge amounts of people are going to be displaced. I mean, if you think about it from if you're a consumer, people often don't like talking to machines, you know, on phone line. There are companies now where they're saying, hey, you'll get put through to a real person and not a chatbot. I actually see people wanting to engage in that way and it being more personalized as a part of the service. My hope is that the displacement is in the areas where it was impractical for people to do those jobs. And usually they're highly repetitive, not very fulfilling roles. So I'm hoping the future is going to be all about us doing more meaningful things and allowing the AI to do the things that aren't as interesting.
Do you think, again, go back to one of the initial things we mentioned, is about this trust and communication, that will help alleviate some of these fears or concerns over not being replaced, as you said, perhaps displacement?
I think we need to engage in the conversation. I think AI is actually all around us right now. You know, if you buy something online, likely there's an AI somewhere that's helping you make your purchase or figuring out how to help you make your next purchase. In our cell phones around us, there's all kinds of AI technology there that is typically helping us in some way. And it is early days. So I think we're surrounded by it. I think we need to engage in the conversation, but I think not fearing it and figuring out what we do is the kind of important next step. But I'm hopeful that this displacement phenomenon that I'm talking about, I'm hopeful that that's going to be something that's going to result in actually positive change rather than it being a very negative.
Thank you. Yes. And Chiranjit, obviously with this change, there will be a macroeconomic impact, potentially even financial stability. What do you see in terms of the positives that can come out of this, but also maybe how we can address the challenges? Are there things that the Bank of England and other central banks can do to help as this AI technology develops?
First of all, I also think the impact will be positive. I do not think there'll be too much negative things we should bother about at this point, but we should be definitely careful. And so AI and machine learning will continue to increase the growth and productivity. So that is definitely good for macroeconomics. So simple example is a predictive text when we are typing with our mobile device. If we keep using similar applications more and more, I personally cannot see any negative impact in economic growth. And more economic growth means new business and hence new job opportunity. Yes, that's true that automation and robotics can wipe out a couple of manual job positions in future, but it will also create plenty of new opportunities. So financial industry can provide more products and services which are non-existent before. So that will surely create new job positions. So we'll see a realignment of labor away from manual work to focus more on creative, innovative, and more meaningful tasks, as we have already discussed. So I don't think that we will see this transformation suddenly. So it is already happening with its own speed. So as long as we are prepared and start gaining new skills according to the future requirements, the impact will be good. And also you don't need too much new knowledge and skills because we are kind of surrounded by AI and machine learning already. We are keep using those things in our day-to-day life. So we are aware of that. And if we keep using them more and more in financial sector and industry, and we know the impact already in general, the positive impact. So I think if we are more or less careful with that, that is good enough. So from central banking perspective, we are keeping our eye on that, how the job sector and how the macroeconomic variables are changing over time. But as of now, I think we just need to be vigilant rather than be too fearful.
Yes, there is this need to upskill, educate and train, and hopefully that will help manage as we do this transition. Just a last question then, what do you think will be the next big developments or key developments with regards to AI and the financial services sector?
Yeah, sure. So there are plenty of possibilities I can see. I believe there will be a rise of those chatty robots to interact with customer more to solve their most of the needs. And I believe the robots will behave more like human than really a robot. The ability to access and process large amounts of data and provide services and advice on the back of it could surely help consumers better navigate between different products and offers. So now many of them are kind of supported by humans. And if there are more such chatty robots, I think it will be more useful or not about that. But I think that part will definitely change that I can see. So this could potentially help people manage their finances in a better way, hopefully. So if chatbots are going to be taking over the financial institution's front desk, another technology is destined to radically change the back end that we haven't discussed today, but I think it's discussed a lot in this particular series, that is blockchain technology. So banks, insurance companies, and other financial institutions have already started investing a lot in this technology and are excited about the potential use of these distributed ledgers and other things. So this development will surely usually provide more information to mined by AI-based systems. Things like insurance and risk management will change profoundly, I believe. By using reputation system based on a person's transactions and smart contracts that people are discussing, and economic and social capital, insurance companies will be able to make much better informed decisions and tailored products.
Robin, your thoughts on what we should be looking out as a sort of next developments and key developments?
So I think we're seeing the kind of rapidly AI systems are becoming very adept at certain narrow problem domains. And I think what we're going to see is the connection of these narrow domains coming together to create very interesting kind of holistic AI solutions. I believe you're going to see a lot of new AI techniques. At the current time, you're seeing them being directed at very narrow kind of slice problems, and they're very good at those narrow problems. What I think is going to happen next is we're going to see the abilities broaden somewhat. I also think there's this idea of cognitive systems, which are AIs which are really good at communicating. You know, they're called cognitive because they operate at a more human understandable level. And you see that with systems you can talk to and they will answer you. And I see that happening more and more across different application domains. And I think how we interact with computers is going to change. One example that someone gave me was, if your job is to look at one screen and then type a number in another screen, that's not really a very practical use of human ability and human time. What I see is that AI is coming to help us with how we interact with systems and becoming much smarter at helping us create new solutions to problems that we don't think AI can be applied to. I mean, if you go back just a few years, 3 or 4, and you said, hey, there's going to be an AI that's going to help a doctor diagnose cancer, or there's going to be an AI that will help an audit a set of accounts. You know, people would have said, well, I'm not very sure on that. Is the technology really capable of doing that? What we've seen is that it is. And what's going to happen is more of those applications are going to surface, and we're going to discover new efficiencies that aren't obvious to us right now. So I'm very hopeful that we're going to see broader adoption of AI across different domains, and that we'll also see more cognitive systems coming to bear, where it's a much more human interaction that we will have with those AI systems.
I'd like to thank you both for taking part in the podcast. Next week, we will have a special recording with Jacques Delarosier to mark the 25th anniversary of the 1992 Sterling crisis. This will be live on the OnFIF channel on Tuesday, and you can download it once it's been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review.